The Brewers do it again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers are divisional champs of the NL Central. Although they lost yesterday 5-1 to the Cards, the Reds swept the Cubs, so Milwaukee, divisional champs for a third year in a row. Manager Pat Murphy.
Well, just this team finds a way. They're resilient, and they're guys that have a special it factor.
NFL, the Packers shocked by the Browns, losing 13-10 on a walk-off field goal by Cleveland. Defensive end Micah Parsons.
Man, it's like a movie sometimes how football works. I just think towards the end of the game they played better than us, and we got to play all four quarters of football.
College football, the Badgers losing at home to Maryland Saturday, 27-10, and now headed into the bye.
We've got a challenge. I felt like the culture of this team and the things that we did in the offseason and in fall camp was something that was a lot stronger than what we have had. We're going to find out how strong it is. That's where we're going to have to go because this thing doesn't get any easier.
That's head coach Luke Fickell with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Had an interesting weekend. Check something off my bucket list. Here in Pennsylvania, Bloomsburg has a big fair. The county fair, big to do. So put it on my checklist so I could cross it off the bucket list. Took my wife to go see the animals, the horses, the cows, all the things you would find at a county fair, and it was awesome. The thing is, the weird thing is it's way up. It's at the almost near the top of the T there in Pennsylvania. This is Trump country, big Trump country. And interestingly enough, didn't see the flags, didn't see the giant blow up Trumps. I only saw two people with T-shirts. Oddly enough, only two people with Charlie Kirk shirts. So I'm wondering if the distraction that we're seeing, all of the memorials for Kirk and all of the Trump whining and the Kimmel thing, I'm wondering if that's hitting the base. Or is the reality that those communities are hurting? In fact, I was just reading an article over at Fortune. That pointed out that a survey done by the National Corn Growers Association, not what you would call a hippie liberal group, they've pointed out that of the people that they polled, their members, 46% of them believe that the U.S. is on the brink of a farm crisis, and another third were like, maybe. So you're looking at potentially 79% of farmers and the farm community going, we're in big trouble. And it all comes back down to Trump's policies, be it the tariffs and the immigration. Because interestingly enough, a lot of these folks use immigrant labor, which is why you're seeing Republican congressmen here in Pennsylvania going, hey, how about some relief? Why you're seeing Republican congressmen around the country quietly trying to get the administration to relax some of those immigration things. Go after those people in Chicago, but leave us rural users of cheap labor and immigrants alone. Leave us alone so we can continue to have our cheap labor, especially if you're going to screw us with tariffs and not open up foreign markets. And again, this is one of those weird kind of moments where this is what you voted for. You got exactly what you voted for. And you don't like it. And it's weird because I overheard a number of people having conversations around the animals, because these are the actual farmers taking care of the animals. of how hard it has gotten, how difficult it is for them. And a couple of them said, you know, there were fewer people at the show than there had been in past years because they just didn't have people to do it. Now, the weird thing is that coincides with, and I can't believe I'm getting old, man. I'm feeling old. The 40th Farm Aid. And I'll bet you most of you didn't even know we're still doing Farm Aid every year. You remember Willie Nelson, Neil Young, John Mellencamp? They did the first Farm Aid back in 85 to raise awareness to the loss of family farms and to help people get through what was a rough time. Well, it's gotten rougher. And the sad reality is a lot of those family farms that I'm a huge supporter of, they're getting crushed. See, for me, I'm not one of those people going, well, good for them. They voted for this. This is what you voted for. Understand it. You need to know it. Because the first way of understanding how you fix something is knowing what you screwed up. And you voted for people who don't care about you. You voted for people based on your hatred and your anger. And understand, they don't like you as much as you don't like the other that they've fed you. So for me, this is an opportunity to reach out, to grow, to talk to people and to say, hey, how can we move forward together? Because guess what? I know my urban dweller, you know, liberal friends, going, the heck with them. We kind of need them too. They need us. We need them. This is where finding our common ground and going, how can you survive and get us lower prices? Because the weird thing about this Fortune article is they're saying that purchasing is plummeting. So there should be a surplus. There should be stuff out there. Why are food prices not coming down if there's all this surplus because no other countries are taking it? What's going on? And if we're subsidizing heavily through the nightmare bill that Trump signed, why are all these rural communities suffering? That becomes another question. And for me, this is another opportunity to reach out and go, okay, is this just another example of a big ag sticking it to the little guy? Is this another example of bad government not regulating, not helping, not doing its job? Because, hey, these are people who don't. Our government right now is run by people who don't believe in it and are never going to use it for the benefit of we the people. Going to use it as a bludgeon so that they themselves can make a whole boatload of money. And they are. Give them credit. And you know who they're not? They're not these small farmers. They're not the people who brought their pigs and their cows and their horses and their sheep and their chickens and all that stuff to that farm show. It's not. It's not the same people. The people in the halls of power don't care about any of those people. So for me, I care about them. I want them to do well. Because if they do well, that means we get to do well. And we better figure out how we come around to that. Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, is gonna be here to talk about her new book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers. And they do. Right back with Randy Weingarten. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the reality is, and you go back, you never let a good crisis go to waste. And the Trump folks are doing everything that's predictable. And this is what authoritarians do. This is right out of the fascist playbook, which is why there couldn't be a more timely release for a bit of reading. And good for your weekend read. Pick up Why Fascists Fear Teachers, Public Education and the Future of Democracy, written by my next guest, American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course.
So let's start right at the beginning. I mean, are you surprised that when they couldn't pin Charlie Kirk's murder on a trans person, they immediately went after education?
No. I'm not surprised at all. I am surprised at and I'm not surprised about what they did to Jimmy Kimmel, and I'm not surprised what they did to Stephen Colbert. As I think one of the historians said in the last 24 hours on Twitter, that Russia used to have a robust set of comedians. And when that stopped, and this is after, let me just say, Russian President Putin said wars are won by teachers. And so as they clamp down on free speech, and as they censor more and more stuff, what you see is more and more and more fascistic tendencies. And so what we know from history, as well as from the present, is that authoritarians, or those who don't want to follow a democracy, they revel in fear and angst. And what they do is they create a division always that divides the us versus the them. And it tends to be that teachers, those who actually try and create a safe and welcoming environment for kids, and teachers who try to teach kids critical thinking so that they can question what is going on, so that they discern fact from fiction. What we see historically is that in times of great authoritarian push, the playbook dictates or says that you go after those who teach. We saw that in fascistic regimes. We see that in authoritarian regimes like Viktor Orban's. And we are seeing that in terms of the censorship and this rush to fire teachers all throughout Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, and other places in America.
Right. And all in the name of free speech.
Well, this time it is in the name of how it's conduct unbecoming to actually have a personal and private opinion of what just happened to Charlie Kirk. Now, let me just say very clearly, on a personal level, as well as professionally, as our union, we have said over and over and over again that political violence must be denounced. It has to be denounced if it happens on January 6th, and it has to be denounced if it happens to Donald Trump or to Charlie Kirk. You cannot have an ideological lens about whether you denounce political violence. And I've also said that we should never be celebrating political violence. And when people celebrated it against Melissa Hortman or against Paul Pelosi, we have been deeply critical. And the same is true, I think, here. But what's happening now is that teachers, in their own personal social media feeds on their own personal time, if they have said anything that doesn't completely toe the line with what, you know, Mr. President Trump or Vice President Vance wants them to say or think, or that they are getting fired. And so this is, and you see it also with Jimmy Kimmel, you see it with some journalists. This is censorship. This is, and even conservative journalists like Tucker Carlson are saying to people like Pam Bondi and others, no, there is no carve out for hate speech. This is a censorship and an abridgment of the First Amendment. So you can find something distasteful. There's a whole lot of comments in the world that I find really distasteful, that I really don't agree with. But you have to defend people's rights to say what they believe or what they feel, as long as it's not inciting and as long as it's not violent. That is the that is the American value system. That is what the First Amendment means. So this is actually, you know, the irony is that Charlie Kirk would have fought for people's rights to say whatever they wanted to say nonviolently. But right now what's happening is that there is censorship in his name.
Yeah, but now in your book, you argue that fascists fear teachers because they encourage critical thinking. And, you know, I started thinking about, you know, why is it that, that Trump and the MAGA folks are so hostile to the basic idea of critical thinking? And also, I think this is an opportunity to maybe educate a bit on what the First Amendment really is, instead of what we're told repeatedly that it is, when it really kind of isn't.
So, you know, I found it fascinating today that, you know, people like Brit Hume, Barry Weiss, others who, you know, virtually wouldn't agree with me on virtually anything, they have said to people in their universe, be careful here, because all of us should be fighting for, we may have different views on everything, but the what makes America America is that the First Amendment of our Constitution has a very healthy view of freedom of speech and freedom of association and freedom of religion. And that is part of the ethos of who we are as Americans. And it doesn't mean that your speech rights are unbridled against, but it, what it means is that the government cannot go up against you because they disagree with what you say. And in some ways there's a legal opinion that happened just last year where the NRA, in an opinion that enabled them to say whatever they wanted to say, that the opinion was clear that the government cannot suppress speech it dislikes. Just like, you know, and so the First Amendment basically is a rule, an injunction against the government, first federal and now state and local, to not be able to censor speech, period. Unless speech is violent or insightful, they have no right to stop you from holding up a sign or saying whatever you believe or feel. And for me, I get called a lot of words that I don't like, that I don't believe are true, but I will defend somebody's right to do it.
No. If you see my email box, especially recently, a lot of not nice things, a lot of things that wouldn't probably be said to your face, but since we have the internet and social media, you know, yeah, where people can be the worst versions of themselves, you get some really, really ugly stuff. For instance, you know, I've never seen a teacher I've never seen someone call a teacher an indoctrinator or any of the other vile stuff you see online to my face or to them. But yet I see some politicians getting their moments on social media. I see other people who have called your members, you, indoctrinators while banning books and trying to rewrite history. And it seems like there's something there. So what does it reveal about, who's really doing the indoctrinating if you're trying to rewrite history in real time?
Well, look, the far right, in my judgment, is very, very good at accusing others of exactly what they're doing. And if you look, for example, at, I'll just give a example that happened this week. You know, we're going to have a big, next year is the 250th anniversary of the country. That's a big deal. Normally, and what has happened in the past with these big anniversaries, is that there is a bipartisan commission that really tries to bring the country together to try to celebrate the anniversary. And what has happened in the civics field is there's a lot of bipartisan work that still gets done. You know, question if it's effective or not, but it still gets done. For the first time that I can remember, on Constitution Day, which was this week, Linda McMahon introduced a commission on civics. There is no bipartisanship there. There's no neutral body there. Every group that's there is from the hard right who wants to censor history, erase history, rewrite history, and in the name of, quote, patriotic education. Look, I wear my American flag, I think it's here, every day. I am as patriotic as anybody else is. Don't take my patriotism away. But it's all the propagandists, as opposed to anyone who has been working in this field forever. And even Rick Hess from the American Enterprise Institute said, if anyone on the Democratic side had ever done anything remotely like this, the Republicans would be screaming, because you immediately undermine what is supposed to happen at the 250th anniversary, which is an inflection point to basically bring the country together. And why do fascists fear teachers? Because what fascistic behavior is it's divide and conquer. But it's worse than that. It is basically saying there's an in-group, us, and an out-group, them. And then what they do is that they don't only say division, but they demonize and dehumanize the out-group so much that people then look at the out-group as not even human beings, yeah, to justify the violence that gets done against them. And they create so much fear that only the strong man is the one who you can rely on to deal with all of the fear.
Yeah, and we stop questioning. No, look, my generation, I grew up believing you question everything. And I'm trying to figure out how my generation has, or at least some in my generation, have run for that to where you don't question anything. It's now we're in our camps, and we have to believe the hard line from either side. And there isn't that critical thinking. There isn't that filter of going, hey, wait a second. Exactly, maybe this isn't what we should be doing. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, how we got here and make sure that my kids don't end up like that. Because, again, I want them questioning things. We want students to the scientific method. We want them, to be...
The Socratic method.
There we go.
Scientific method. Well, I think, Rick, part of this... And we're starting to learn this about test scores too, and about attention. One of the huge differences for this generation than for your and my generation growing up is social media and no guardrails on social media. So remember, even until the last, I would say, year or two, when Facebook took off its guardrails and X took off its guardrails, now what essentially happens is that social media can be a sewer. They can do, you can, and what we see from research is that it has made people angrier and more divisive. And then when you have a president who doesn't believe his job is to bring people together, but that his job is to, you know, exploit the, you know, the crevices and the anger. And you see it in the wake of Mr. Kirk's assassination. That makes it worse. But I would go to what, you know, Governor Cox has said, someone who, you know, ideologically I'm really different from on the issues, but he's completely right that civil discourse, that in a moment like this, we actually have to listen to each other. We don't have to agree with each other, but we can't get into fight or flight every time there's a disagreement. And so if we're teaching kids in school critical thinking, conflict resolution, if these things are actually seen as valuable, then what we're doing is we're giving kids the skills and knowledge they need to be able to use these vital skills for life in the civic world as well. And I'll say one more thing, which is the framers wanted this. Now, the framers are not perfect. Obviously, many of them owned slaves. Women didn't have the right to vote. African-Americans didn't have the right to vote. So I don't want to put the framers up on a pedestal here. But there's a lot of things they did that were right. And one of the things they did is they fought to have education. Every single state had an education system. Donald Trump is wrong. We're not returning education to the states. Every state has one. And what they understood is that if kids had the habits of democracy, which required critical thinking and other aspects of education, that would be the single most important way we would stop another king or monarch from governing the United States.
So it's the last question I've got for you, because, you know, the role of public education, which is under assault like never before in our lifetime, this administration is, you know, going a full tilt boogie after destroying the Department of Education. We're seeing all these privatization schemes popping up, all of this messaging around public education being somehow now bad. You've written that we need public schools to sustain democracy. What should, outside of buying the book and reading the book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers, what should parents, what should citizens, what should we be doing?
So I spend a little bit of time in the book talking about that, because the book is both a warning and it spells out the antidote that actually helps our society congeal again. So the number one thing I would ask parents and citizens and community groups and community members to do is show up, work with your neighborhood school. Do something. None of us can do everything, but all of us can do something. Work with a PTA. Take an idea that you care about and help in a local community. Engage in your local community. Yes, of course, show up for a protest. If you don't believe in America should have tyrants or kings, show up on October 18th. But for us to actually sustain public education, it's a public good. Let's do these things at our local community and make sure that we support teachers and kids and parents as we not only fight for a future, but create pathways for a future.
There you go. The book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers, Public Education and the Future of Democracy, written by Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Highly suggest it. I hate to say I enjoyed it, but I think it's really important in this moment. So, Randy, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening storms, otherwise partly cloudy tonight. A low in the upper 50s with patchy fog. Mostly cloudy for tomorrow morning, some sun in the afternoon. A high in the upper 60s. Staying dry through the week as temperatures stay in the 70s. Currently at 62 degrees.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting weekend in Trump world. The speech. And I honestly had never heard of the American Cornerstone Institute. I've heard of a lot of think tanks. There are a lot of them out there. The American Cornerstone Institute, not one I had heard of. Now I have to spend time, a lot of time figuring out, you know, when did they come out? Who and which billionaire is funding them? But some of the fun, some of the entertainment that came out of that, well worth the watch. But here to share some thoughts on, well, that speech, and, well, all of the other things that happened over the weekend in Trumplandia. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I'm good. I've been holding this one, this comment from the American Cornerstone Institute speech given by Trump over the weekend. He said that there are only two genders, Sarah, there are two genders. There are men and there are female. Two genders. Men, female.
Okay. That's going to be news to a whole heck of a lot of biologists. But you know what? Again, because Trump is really cracking down on free speech, I think we really should take a moment and praise our overlord. If he's going to be determining everything that we say and who is allowed to say it now, then clearly, you know.
And I better run back inside. I had better go back in and tell my children that there are two genders. There's my son, men, and then you females.
It's very interesting because that whole argument over, you know, the chromosome issues, like this fight over gender has prompted a lot of science around it, that things that I didn't know, because, you know, I'm a lit person.
That's what liberals do. They learn. That's right? Why we must destroy education.
Yeah. Well, again, like, these are the problems that Donald Trump has really got to crack down on, is making sure that kids don't learn things, and God forbid they say things, and they certainly can't say anything bad about him. So this is our world now, our free speech world.
Exactly. Also, you know, amazing news. I didn't know, because our mainstream media is so busy attacking Trump 97% of the time, evidently. 97% of every word that comes out of someone's mouth is, according to Donald Trump, anti-Trump. I'm not sure which orifice he plucked that out of. I can guess. But 97%. But what I also didn't find out is, evidently, that according to him, during his speech at the American Cornerstone Institute, they stopped a war between India and Pakistan, between Thailand and Cambodia, between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and also Cambodia and Armenia, which, I got to be honest, that's the one that made my ears perk up. I'm going, hold on. I was not a good student, especially in geography, but I know that they're not even freaking close. And I looked it up. They're like 4,200 miles apart. That's a tough war to be engaged in.
That's like, you know, a U.S. apart, right? That's almost a U.S. apart or close to it. The thing, I mean, I too have never heard of the Cornerstone Institute. I thought maybe it was like a Mason thing because, you know, they make cornerstones of buildings. I didn't know. It's not, apparently. It sounds like one of those organizations that one of the MAGA people who were cast out from the first Trump administration, who were desperately trying to stay involved in this Trump administration and keep themselves in the good graces, started some organization. But yeah, the Trump rant was 97%, but then he changed it. He was like, or something like that, 94%, depending on which survey you hear, 95%, 96%, or it could have been 89%, which is what he said at one point. It could have been 89%. It really doesn't matter because all the coverage is anti-Trump. It doesn't matter what the number is because it's all anti-Trump. I personally, just based off of watching TV from, you know, off and on for the last several years, have noticed that 97% has nothing to do with Trump. If you're not watching cable news, then you're probably not hearing anything about Donald Trump. Probably watching a movie of the week on Lifetime or the Game Show Network or something far more interesting than Donald Trump news. So I don't know where he's coming up with this number other than an orifice. I think you're spot on.
He reached around behind there and popped something out. Got himself a golden nugget. The American Cornerstone Institute, I have now found out. I've done my crack research team. Looked it up. It is it's a conservative nonprofit organization founded by Dr. Ben Carson. Evidently, when he left the Trump administration, needed a gig because probably nobody would hire him. And I don't know that. It just seems, given his positions that he took while in government, who knows? Or there's just big money in dreaming up conservative nonprofits. Lots of billionaire money to go into that. And that explains why Trump said he's going to give him the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I think it's definitely the latter. Like there, and you're seeing this with Mark Meadows too, where Mark Meadows founded this think tank or something, which like some American First Institute type thing. And so he is getting paid bukus of bucks to basically lead this organization that I don't really know what they do, but except for come up with America First policies similar to what the Heritage Foundation has already done in Project 2025. Either way, I guess Ben Carson managed to start his own little organization, get a billionaire to fund him, and then, I don't know, get Donald Trump to give him a medal.
No, look, and the goal of this organization is to encourage public discussion and discourse and civic engagement with groups like A More Perfect Union Project and Little Patriots, where they go after children and try and teach Judeo-Christian values and promote election integrity, evidently, to children, and religious liberty and all this. And I got to tell you, sounds an awful lot like the indoctrination they claim everyone else is doing.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you don't really see a whole lot of the same kind of indoctrination that they say is happening in liberal America that Donald Trump is actually, his buddies are actually funding. And I would say too, like, you're watching Larry Ellison and his son David take over the media, right? Like, they just bought CBS Paramount. Now they're involved in TikTok, and now Ellison is he's talking about going after Discovery Warner Brothers as well. So there's this very strange sort of movement of conservatives trying to take over every ounce of speech.
Well, they see their opportunity, Sarah. They see their opportunity. Yeah. I mean, you look at the thing with Kimmel and the FCC. You know, I've had all these people, the free market pulled Kimmel off. No, they didn't, you dim-witted puddle brain flag monkey. Had nothing to do with that. Had nothing to do with the free market, had everything to do with the chairman of the FCC going, hey, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. And they took the easy way because you don't want to get on the wrong side of a government agency who doesn't run out of time or money. And oh, by the way, might tie up your big monopolistic type merger.
That's the thing that I think is more important. I think Sinclair and Nexstar basically were the ones who got Jimmy Kimmel fired. I think within, you know, several hours, they decided Jimmy Kimmel said something bad, or he lied, or whatever spin they're trying to come up with this time. And it was Sinclair and Nexstar that basically said, we're not going to show this. We're going to put on something else. And the thing about Disney is they get spooked really, really easily. We've seen this happen over and over again, where anytime Disney, you know, has any kind of conflict, particularly with a Republican, they get really nervous about it. And they might stand up for like 5 seconds, like what happened in Florida, but ultimately they caved into Ron DeSantis there and they'll cave into Donald Trump here. I have heard one of the reports that I did on Friday, the Deadline, the Hollywood publication Deadline, said that what they're hearing from inside Disney is that they're super spooked. Like, they're freaking out, not necessarily about the FCC battle. They're freaking out about the number of people that are canceling Disney Plus and you know, all of the streaming services like Hulu and the ones that are all connected, like I think they have ESPN as well. So folks are canceling those in droves, and that's got them freaking out, in part because then they're starting to get nervous that that's going to spill over into vacations, parks, because you've got, you know, the holidays coming up, and a lot of people, like, that's their busiest time, where people go to Disney World and Disneyland and have huge family vacations there over the winter because it's not insanely hot like it is in July.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that they're starting to get nervous. I don't know that it will matter is the thing that I'm worried about. I think that there's tons of protests. There were, we've been in Los Angeles, and so there's been a ton of protests in Vegas, and I mean, Burbank and Studio City and other parts of that sort of studio world where people have been complaining about, you know, the Kimmel stuff. What I think is interesting to me is you're also starting to see a little bit more local movement. And we've talked about this a lot. It's the more impact you can have locally, the more it will impact nationally. Like, you need millions of people to make a difference at the presidential level.
Right.
But if you've got like 20 people who call an advertiser, like a local advertiser off of, you know, some Sinclair local station, and complain to that advertiser, you know, you advertise on Sinclair, I'm never going to buy, you know, your stuff again. You have enough of those people, and it doesn't take that many. It takes a couple dozen. Those businesses are then going to call Sinclair and say, I've got a problem. And if those local networks are starting to see a financial impact, then you're going to see a broader impact.
Yeah, but this is something the right learned years ago, Sarah. They've been doing this for years now. This isn't new. This is where the left has been out organized at every opportunity. Granted, the billionaires have funded the right. Look, over the weekend you had the Charlie Kirk Memorial, and, you know, good on them for having their memorial send off, whatever. Some of the propaganda coming out of that is kind of frightening, but let them have their day. But without billionaire money, you don't hear of Charlie Kirk. Without the billionaires who funded Turning Point USA, you don't hear about that. All of this stuff emanates from the very wealthy in this country deciding what the rest of us can and cannot have, see, or get. And it's that simple. And what's weird to me is we're fighting over you know, base level stuff, while the folks sitting up in the ivory towers, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Laughing all the way to the bank and taking over every ounce of our media, where basically we get to a point where we can't even trust with what we're seeing and hearing. Like, the whole narrative that conservatives tried to take over the Kimmel thing was, he lied about this thing, and he said all this, these fake things, and you can't do that
Here's exactly what he said. I said, quote, this is what everyone agrees has got him canned. We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them, and doing everything they can to score political points from it. That is it. And every person.
And if you weren't, if you were watching Twitter over any of that, you saw people desperately trying to score political points. This was not in question. And I think, I don't know if Sinclair or if it was just somebody who freaked out and called Bob Iger at Disney or what it exactly it was, but it was like they pulled the plug before they actually even read the statement.
No, they all,
because when
absolutely
people look at it, you're like, really?
But facts matter anymore, Sarah. It's the narrative that counts, because every person that I've talked to about this is, well, he lied. And then the wheels start spinning. Well, he wasn't really one of the MAGA people. He wasn't MAGA. Yeah, but the entire family is. He comes from a long line of gun nut toting, extreme religious kind of right wing conservative. Grandma said so. So I don't know how you can then divorce them. Now, I called it from the beginning. I said, well, if he doesn't fit neat into a box as a trans person, it's going to be about higher education. And oddly enough, they went there too.
Right. I mean, I feel like last week we were just barely sort of coming up with some of the information about what was going on and who this guy was. And now we find out that, oh, it's college that clearly indoctrinated him. It took like a week or something to completely flip his entire identity from being a gun-toting, you know, pro-MAGA Republican, Trump-supporting Republican, to being something else, to want to kill Charlie Kirk.
A trans-loving murderer. You know, one of those lefties.
Right.
I can't tell you how many people told me that he was a lefty. Now, there's a report out that said that there's no way to connect this guy to the left at all. So my question back to those folks who were cheering Kimmel being fired for what he said, when do the Fox folks, when do the OANs, when do the Newsmaxes, when do all of those other places who are pointing their fingers, when does Nancy Mace get held accountable? When do we start? Because if you're talking about accountability and responsibility, of which I'm a huge proponent, when is it nonpartisan?
Hell, I saw a report on Saturday, I think it was, that an Illinois teacher was fired for repeating Charlie Kirk's quote about empathy and school shootings and how we shouldn't feel empathy for them. And like literally all she did was quote Charlie Kirk, and that was it. And she was out. And so it's sort of, I feel like this sort of crackdown on free speech that we're seeing everywhere is interesting, because we're also seeing people kind of decide that what Charlie Kirk has said isn't acceptable inadvertently, right? Like if you're repeating what he said and you're fired from that, isn't that basically your school system saying that Charlie Kirk is worth firing somebody over?
Yeah, no, look, over the weekend, Donald Trump said Charlie Kirk's a martyr. He came right out and said it. He's a martyr. And your home state of Oklahoma, ready to canonize him. In fact, as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong on this, there's a piece of legislation that's moving somewhere in your state's House, Senate, wherever, that would make every college campus, correct me if I'm wrong on this, every college campus to have like a plaza and a statue, some kind of memorial to Charlie Kirk, even though he'd probably never been on any of those campuses, but going to have that. And also, October 14th is going to be Charlie Kirk Free Speech Day.
Which is funny, because so the Oklahoma legislature isn't in session right now. So there's no vote that's going to happen until January on any of these issues. So, I mean, they can propose this until the cows come home. But essentially, if you're mandating that every college campus in the state of Oklahoma have a statue or a plaza or whatever, then it's an unfunded mandate that the state's not going to pay for. So I'm pretty sure that one of the biggest problems that Republicans had with Obamacare was that it was an unfunded mandate.
Yeah, but this is different. this is our martyr. And the one thing Republicans do better than anybody is they slap their martyrs and their heroes' names all over everything. It's the one thing Democrats didn't do with Obama. I didn't do it with Clinton either. No Bill Clinton elementary schools. There's a lot of Ronald Reagan stuff. There's a freaking airport, roads, all kinds of stuff. Post office. They will, the people who hate government the most want to slap their name over everything government they can get their letters on.
And this is the state, too, I want to point out, that tried to buy up all of the Trump Bibles to make sure that every school, every classroom had one, something like that. And that didn't go over very well. So I'm wondering, is this really going to happen? Or is this just going to be, is this just basically political opportunity for somebody to try and fundraise off of?
Yeah. We've got one in my state, Ding Dong Diamond. He's proposing the same kind of thing. We're going to have a Charlie Kirk Day. I'm like, go ahead. Good. What about the other 18,000 people who get killed, who've been killed already this year through gun violence? Charlie Kirk didn't seem to be all that upset about them. And the weird thing for me, and this is where I want to end this, is, look, there's part of me that just goes, I just want to, you had your day, you had your memorial. It's horrible. It's tragic. It's wrong. It should never be condemned or allowed or accepted to have this kind of violence. But this fight over him being a martyr and being this generation's civil rights hero, I think people have to fight back against that with every bit of energy.
I think one of the most important things is, if you're going to be a civil rights hero, to actually support civil rights. Just a thought.
I'm going to let that sink in for a moment, because I think that's an important point. It's a very important point. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Keep up the work there at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah Burris, thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a great week, everybody.
Want to hear your thoughts. Do you agree, disagree? Should Kirk be put on a pedestal as a martyr, given all the things that he has said over the years? And, if you don't know what was said, maybe before jumping onto the bandwagon, maybe we find out? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Hate email goes to the top. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1985. That was the year that the first Farm Aid concert was held in Champaign, Illinois. A retrospective article in Time magazine reported, quote, "In the 1980s, American farmers were hit hard by what were, at the time, the worst economic conditions since the Great Depression. Droughts ravaged the fields, property values plunged, loan interest rates soared, thousands were forced off their land and faced foreclosure and bankruptcy. Farmer suicide rose at alarming rates. The idea to use music to aid the farmers began with Bob Dylan at an event to help African famine victims. Then musicians Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, and Neil Young took up his idea and ran with it. 50 musicians took the stage at the University of Illinois football stadium. The organizers were joined by such headliners as Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, Billy Joel, Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, Bonnie Raitt, Kenny Rogers, Joni Mitchell, The Beach Boys, Jimmy Buffett, Bon Jovi, Foreigner, and more. The musicians played for 14 hours to a rain-soaked crowd of nearly 80,000. A telethon also helped to bring in donations. It raised $9 million for farm relief. More importantly, it helped raise national awareness of the dire economic conditions faced by many small farmers. Farm Aid has continued to hold concerts for small farmers. In 2015, the 30th anniversary concert was held in Chicago. As an organization, Farm Aid has raised more than $50 million for small farmers.
Now, live for Farm Aid and a concert for America, here's Willie Nelson.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show.
I just can't wait to get on school.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, I didn't watch the memorial over the weekend for Charlie Kirk. And look, I do have sympathy for his family, for his children, absolutely without question. As I do for any person, whether I agree with you, I disagree with you, like you, don't like you, know you, don't like you, I have the same sympathy, the same empathy, the same feelings. But what's going to be happening over the next several months is going to be a push to use this person as a legacy and an excuse to do all kinds of horrible stuff. And the weird thing is they're going to try and do all this stuff as under the guise of free speech while canceling anyone whose speech they don't like, which was weird. Again, over the weekend, you had Trump go on some weird, bizarre rant about how 97% of the news is anti-Trump. What was the quote? If they're 97% against me, they provide nothing but negative publicity or press. I think if they're getting a license, perhaps it should be revoked. That is another one of those veiled, not so veiled threats that either you stop talking bad about me and telling the truth, because let's go with it. Let's say 97% of things that let's use me. 97% of the things I say about Donald Trump is negative, because I think 97% of what he does is bad. I think it's horrible for the country what he is doing. I think his policies are terrible for the country. There's about 3% that I agree with him on. So maybe that's an accurate number. I don't know. I agree with about 3% of the tariff idea, but I think he's screwing that up something awful. I think I agree with about 3% of his manufacturing policy. So maybe. But this idea that they're going to use government as a bludgeon, they've told you they're going to do this. He said during the campaign, going to be a dictator on day one, going to be your retribution. And the weird thing is the silence of certain groups is concerning to me. For instance, I saw MSNBC host Nicole Wallace kind of call out The View for not saying. Normally The View, they got opinions on everything. That kind of hush on. It's an interesting time that we're in. And if you're arguing that, well, it was free enterprise, nope, that's not what we're seeing here, folks. I'm all in favor of a private corporation wants to get rid of me or somebody, they've got the right to do that. But when the FCC, when the president of these United States puts his, not just his thumb, but his whole hand on the scale, every one of us should be concerned about that. Every one of us. Because eventually, what we've learned about Trump is nobody's pure enough. Nobody's loyal enough. And this may be a bit too far. This may be just a bit too far. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A big announcement from President Trump and his Department of Health and Human Services. CBS's Stacey Lynn.
Without providing specific evidence linking them, President Trump says pregnant women should not take Tylenol because it can be associated with an increased risk of autism.
All pregnant women should talk to their doctors for more information.
He said ideally they shouldn't take it at all, but
if you can't tough it out, if there's a problem, you're going to end up doing it.
So what should pregnant women take instead?
There's not an alternative to that. And as you know, other of the medicines are absolutely proven bad. I mean, they've been proven bad.
Stacey Lynn, CBS News, the White House.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says the announcement is not backed by the full body of scientific evidence and dangerously simplifies the many and complex causes of neurologic challenges in children. Jimmy Kimmel returns to his show tomorrow night after ABC